Foundation for Friday, March 16th. Welcome, members. Good to see all of you. Before we begin, we have a special guest with us today. Donna Foxley from the United States Department of Education is here with us. She's the Secretary's Regional Representative. So, Donna, nice to have you here. And say nice things about us.
Yeah, when you get a chance.
I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2676. Mr. Olson, would you be so kind?
Thanks for helping me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2676 prohibits the application of adverse possession to extinguish or diminish real property interests of school districts or post-secondary institutions, as well as the Oregon School for the Deaf and the Oregon School for the Blind. You have before you the staff measure summary. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Joe Crum, please. Thank you, Mr. Crum. Andy will take those and distribute them.
We're quoting Wikipedia now.
We're using Wikipedia as
the reference now.
They had the best.
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, my name is Joe Crum. I'm the Director of Community and Government Relations for the North Clackamas School District. Thanks very much for hearing this bill. I'm here on behalf of the school district in support of House Bill 2676. My school district's interest in this issue arises from an event that occurred in my district. In the initial steps of extending a school bus parking area at one of our older schools, we discovered that a small part of concrete pad that had to be removed to make way for the bus lane crossed the lot line onto the adjoining landowner's property. This concrete was poured decades ago when the two lots were a single parcel with a common owner. When we told the neighbor we intended to remove the concrete from the school grounds, he asserted ownership to the pad and the underlying school grounds by reason of adverse possession. We were able to resolve this situation without too much expense or delay. However, House Bill 2676 will help us and other school districts avoid similar costs and delays in the future. Our legal counsel tells us that common law provides that adverse possession cannot be claimed against the state or its political subdivisions, such as cities and counties. We understand that rule of law applies to public school districts as well, but that it is a point on which Oregon's appellate courts have yet to rule. As we meet here today, the common law rule has been codified in part. ORS 221.750 protects the public lands of cities and towns from claims of adverse possession, and ORS 275.027 provides the same protection to county lands. However, there is no corresponding codification of the common law rule assuring the same rights and the same protection for public school districts. That is our concern. Our legal counsel has also told us that when the legislature codifies one application of a common law rule, but omitting another application of that rule, the court sometimes construe the legislature's omission as an intent to overrule the part omitted. Which is to say, the courts may conclude that by codifying the common law as to cities and counties, but not to public schools, the legislature must have intended to do away with the protection from loss of lands by adverse possession historically afforded public school districts as government entities. Point of fact, that the law had already been codified to include public schools, the situation we faced could have been avoided altogether. So thank you for your time today, and we appreciate the opportunity to bring this to the legislature.
Thank you, Mr. Crum. Any questions? Yes,
I
don't.
I'm sure that you answered this question, but I want to make absolutely certain for the record that the issue that you had with the Clackamas School District has been resolved. And this is follow-up to that, not a
yes.
Precursor. Thank you.
Representative Donald, yes, sir.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Sure.
President Greenlee.
In the case that you talked about particularly, which you resolved, had that person in fact been using that egress from his or her property?
Yes. Representative Buckley, Representative Greenlee, yes. Their fence line had basically moved into the school district's area.
Or inadvertent or some way.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
When's that come?
Is this our only piece of testimony in the public hearing?
This is the only person who signed up to testify. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on this bill? This is our...
Well, maybe I'll take a shot with... It's Joe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it might be something for committee staff, too. I'm not exactly sure. I just want to understand adverse possession. It's a process within the law that someone can invoke. And I don't understand what adverse possession is, I guess.
Representative Buckley, Representative Clem, certainly, I know I've spoken with the committee administrator about this, and maybe you can help me out on this as well. My understanding from our legal counsel is basically that when somebody has had lived on the land or used the land for a considerable period of time, then at that point they can claim it as their own.
It's a common law principle, and it relates to the fact that, imagine the circumstance where you have a house and you have a driveway, and your driveway, for all the years you've had it, goes out onto the street. And then somebody does a survey and says, oh, your driveway, I've actually had this happen, your driveway isn't on your lot. You may think it is, but your driveway is on my lot, and you can't get out of your house anymore. It's a common law concept that if you've used it for a long enough period of time,
more than 10 years,
and nobody's challenged your use during that period, that you've somehow acquired a common law right to continue to use it as you've used it. But the point is that application can't be applied against even the government. Is that
correct?
By our statute, and this is just an extension of that. The school district has a unit of government.
That helps.
Oh, sorry. Yes, please.
And Mr. Aiken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason I used the Wikipedia explanation to staff, Mr. Summers, I found it one of the best sort of layman description. I believe that Chuck Taylor from Legislative Council is also in the room, who I discussed this with quite a bit.
Lawyer around, right?
And perhaps we could have him for it. It's actually in ORS 105.620 is where they have acquiring title by adverse possession, and they talk about for a period over 10 years, as Representative Lim talked about it, and goes into the details. But I think probably Mr. Taylor could explain this better than I could.
Representative, this means your office is safe for me.
We need that little divider out in the office space. That's the adverse position.
We're going to be surveys.
Chair Buckley, members, I'm Chuck Taylor from Legislative Council. I think Mr. Crum gave a fairly good summation when he said that you cannot get adverse possession against a public body. Normally, the concept of adverse possession is that if you take property and treat it as your own openly, excluding others from making use of it, or make use of it yourself, and basically assert ownership of it, after a period of 10 years, even if technically you didn't own it, you can become the owner of it. Right now we have one statute in place in Chapter 12 that helps public bodies defend their title to property against adverse possession claims. However, like any immunity the state has, they are always free to waive that by statute. They have in the past passed a statute that affected roadways for cities and counties. The later repeal of that statute caused them to enact the two statutes that have been referred to, I think, by the committee administrator or the witness, basically saying that cities and counties cannot lose their roadway rights. As far as the school districts go, I'm not aware whether there is any case law that has adjudicated whether they are public bodies for that purpose. My assumption would be that they are until we hear otherwise. So this is basically codifying the common law and possibly going beyond that to the extent that the legislature might pass some type of a waiver or expiration of property rights for public property, this would basically exempt the school districts out of that.
Yes, I'm, being as you're the two experts we have, I'm not sure you'll have the information on it, but do we know of any other pending claims against school districts in particular and public agencies in general with adverse possession?
Chair Buckley, Representative Dahlem, I am not aware of what might be pending out there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the summary of the bill, it talks about basically including school for children who are deaf, school for children who are blind, post-secondary institution, or school district. Did we use all of those because we're just trying to get all the educational sectors that we can think of?
Chair Buckley, Representative Clem, yes, that's going to cover the K through 12 schools, community colleges, universities, the Oregon School for the Blind, and Oregon School for the Deaf. It is covering public institutions only and not private schools.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow.
School for the Blind and School for the Deaf, what section of this bill are they covered under? Because I don't see them by name, but I don't know if they're part of the facility that is referenced elsewhere or...
I believe that they are the facilities mentioned in 1A. I can double check that for you, but I believe that's the part that is referring to them.
Yeah, and the reason I'm asking this is so we'll get it on the record here. I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist because I know there's a real issue, but when I read the summary coming down here today, I figured this was going to be a discussion about what happens if we have a report back or a recommendation on the School for the Blind to move or merge the schools or move both somewhere else, and are there adverse property, are there property interests or adverse possessions on either property? In Salem, we've had discussions at the School for the Blind public hearings from people saying they believe the property to be deed restricted by the family who donated it. It cannot be used for the purposes that people think it might be able to be used for if we sold that property, like a hospital or additional university space, that it's deed restricted. What I don't want to do is take away inadvertently that debate right here today. If that's still an open question, still an open debate, I don't want to extend a new right to government on that property that it currently doesn't have, because that debate is not settled, not in my mind at least, because the report hasn't even come out yet.
I understand, Representative. Mr. Olson, can you...
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, first of all, to your first question, yes, facility, and we're talking about ORS 346.010, does specifically talk about the School for the Deaf, School for the Blind. Okay. So that's where that falls under. My understanding, and Mr. Clem might be able to speak to it, the intent of this legislation was not anything ever specific on it. I think, as Mr. Taylor mentioned, it was just to be inclusive. And after checking with the Department of Education, my understanding is the Department of Education does not have any concern about this bill.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, I'm sure they don't.
I do, however. I would be comfortable if A got deleted and we didn't deal with that question now, or I became assured that it wasn't an issue. But
I think maybe...
I believe if we delete A, that defeats the purpose of the bill itself. But would you care to testify?
Okay. Representative
Wilman. Adverse protected possession, what this does is it just codifies the fact that if anybody else was using property that is owned currently by the state, they can't claim that it's theirs. It stays part of the School of the Blind. So this just makes sure that if someone else was using some of that property, they cannot claim that it's their property.
Like the students?
No, students have no, they don't own it. The state owns it. It has nothing to do with that. It just makes sure that the ownership stays with the ownership that it is, which is the state. But if someone's using it and they don't know,
that's not this band. No, that's not using it. That's not using it.
They are guests of that school.
Of the wine, it's owned by us. It's the ownership issue. It has nothing to do with that. What the ownership of Inesh possession is, if one of the neighbors put their fence 10 yards into the property and kept it there for 10 years, they could say that they had adverse possession over that 10 feet. And as soon as it's notified that it's the state's property, they lose that. If it was a regular neighbor, you may have lost that 10 feet of property through adverse possession. But this makes sure that it stays the state's property.
With certainty and absolutely positive. Guarantees the state that they maintain their property, the integrity of their property.
Representative Crumlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with regards to the deed restrictions, a deed restriction can be placed on a property whenever it's sold from one party to another. Those deed restrictions have to be met. The only way to get those lifted is to go back to the family. So in this case, if the family donated that to the state for that specific purpose with a deed restriction, we would have to go back to the family and ask them to lift the deed restriction. I've done this before when we were in Wilsonville, so I understand that. But, Mr. Chair, the question that I have is, besides the situation at North Clackamas School District, are we aware of what the history is in general in terms of, particularly with school buildings and that sort of thing, or is this sort of like taking a proactive preventative sort of a step so that, that this kind of action doesn't happen again?
Would you care to answer that question?
Chair Buckley, Representative Crummell, I think the issue came to our attention through this circumstance, but I think our council came to us and said, gee, could we make sure this doesn't happen again? I think it is preventative.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Representative Crummell.
I just had one question because of one school that's in my district that's not listed here, and that's McLaren or Hillcrest. Because I don't think they're declared as a school district. Oh, yeah, they are part of the Oregon Youth Authority.
That's right.
So that they're covered by that statute then?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. Those properties are properties of the Oregon Youth Authority.
Right.
The McLaren and the Hillcrest properties that are within Marion County are OYA facilities.
But, follow-up, sir?
Representative.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. But they're still on state properties, right?
That's correct. Mr. Chairman, Representative Kopp, that's correct. They are state properties, so they would be covered by the common law protection that's given the state of Oregon.
That's all I need to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rubin.
In your original testimony, I think, Joe, that you had said that one of the problems are we do have statutory authority for all this other state property, county property, and so on. And specifically in that statute, they leave out school districts. And from my perspective, having done some things in schools before, the leaving out is just as important as the leaving in. And I absolutely agree with you on this one, now when you explain that, because if... when a court looks at something, they look for the intent of the legislation, and they look at exactly the words. And if it isn't there, there is an assumption made that they don't get to have that same privilege, and yet it is still public property. So I believe that this is something we really need to do so that when a court has the decision to make, they recognize that we school districts will be covered to the same extent that other public lands will be held to. So from my perspective, it's important that we do this. And I guess, is that clarification of what your testimony was?
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if I could add to that, we represent 197 school districts. North Clackamas is a bit different than some of our other school districts. They own significant amounts of property that may not have a school building on it, and they're holding it for future expansion of their school district. And this is something that we would support because we don't want someone coming in and they're holding it. And I think in Representative Crummell's case, he's got one of these school districts that has bought property for future growth and wants to hold it until they're able to pass a bond or they need that building out in that part of that school district, and for someone to come in and just say, well, I'm going to take it through adverse possession, it, I think, goes against what those taxpayers thought that school district put that money out there for to buy that property. And I can't tell you what type of property we're looking at across the state, but if you take a look at the 197 school districts that own property, it's wide and diverse. And in some instances, in some of your districts, and I'm thinking more particularly in Representative Dahlem's case, there are schools that have been shut down, but the district still holds on to that property. And, you know, the issue of adverse possession is one of those ones that, you know, was put in common law because people who rest on their laurels and don't protect their property shouldn't be given, you know, a good choice of that land. The people who actually work the land, they have it as their own, they hold it as their own. Anybody driving by would say that's theirs. You know, that's the idea behind adverse possession. But school districts and governmental entities are a little bit different, and we do support this bill. One thing I didn't get a chance to research before the hearing, and I know your committee administrator had the statute book out, on line 10 of the bill where we talk about school district, I just want to make sure that ORS 330.005 includes education service districts. I believe that definition does, but I want to make sure we cover those as well, because those, in certain instances, do meet the definition of school district, and I know Mr. Olson has that statute book.
Mr. Chair, while he's looking that up, can I ask Mr. Taylor something?
Yes, Representative Greenlee.
Are we confident that this will protect the tram against a claim of that?
This one.
Representative Clark. Mr. Chair, I just looked up the definition of facility, and line A actually only refers to school for the deaf and school for the blind, so it wouldn't. If you took, and I'm not saying that we operate on a consensus basis right, or anything else, but if that line were out, it wouldn't affect what these folks are here to talk about.
It's understandable.
What line was that?
Representative Clem reports that the ORS 346.010 does refer only to the school of deaf and school of the blind.
Thank you.
And I think it's still expressing concern that this will somehow impact negatively the school of deaf and school of the blind.
President Robin? So if the neighbor next to the school of blind moves that fence over in their property, you're willing to give that up to the people who live next door?
It's not that. It's that I'm not yet, until I talk to the legislative council or the AG, convinced that the children on the property don't potentially have some sort of interest after being there for 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 or however many years it's been there.
There are no children that have been there for 60 years.
Yeah, I guess I'm speaking collectively.
No children.
Can we ask an opinion of legislative council on that, whether the students at a school would have a legal standing to make adverse possession claim?
Representative Buckley, Representative Clem, they would not meet the elements of adverse possession because you need, first of all, to be asserting an exclusive right to the property, the ability, when the incidence of ownership of a property is the ability to exclude others from coming onto it, and obviously no student would be asserting that type of right. Under our statutory codification, you would also have to be entering onto the property under color of title, which means you have some kind of a deed or contract or something, valid or not, that asserts that you are the owner of the property. So I think those are at least two elements where they are not going to be able to meet the requirements for adverse possession. If I may respond, I know Representative Greenlee asked his question tongue-in-cheek, but if I may respond to it, one thing the bill does is it extends to any property in which a school district or school has a property interest. So if you have, in fact, property where a school or school district has an easement of some type over the property, this would protect that easement right.
There's only a room with tongue-in-cheek.
It's hard to tell, Representative, sometimes.
Mr. Chairman, after reviewing the statutes, I don't believe this definition does include education service districts. They have a specific definition within ORS Chapter 334, which is the section that covers education service districts. There is another statute that does include them in the definition of school district, but it's not within this. And I would encourage the committee, and we could work on it if the chair's pleasure and the committee's pleasure to move the bill today, We could definitely amend it on the House side, but I would want to seek an amendment from Legislative Council to include the definition of education service district that's found in ORS Chapter 334.003.
Thank you. Given that concern and given Representative Clem's concern, we will not take action on this bill today. We'll simply close off the public hearing, and we'll ask Representative Clem to follow through to make sure he gets the information he needs to feel comfortable before we move this bill. Ironically enough, members, this is one where our community administrator and I looked at and said, oh, this will be simple.
Mr. Chairman, then would it be your intent to have me work through your committee administration in a minute?
I would appreciate if you would work through Mr. Olson and Mr. Olson, Representative Clem, to be in coordination with any amendments.
Thank you. And for the record, Mr. Chair, he's satisfied with what he's about the school children. Now, because he talked about the title, I'm interested now in the Bush family and their deed, and if they have any adverse interest, so I will work on all those things.
Maybe.
Get myself right.
I know there were contingencies in there. That would be a separate idea.
That would be a separate conference. But I appreciate your input, Representative, and we will hold off until we have clarity on this bill. So I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2676. Members, we have three more bills to hear today. They are very closely related, so I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2763, on House Resolution 3, and House Joint Resolution 429. We have a variety of people who wish to speak to these bills, and are we opening the meeting?
Oh, I'll do it.
I mean, you're not. I thought you were referring to the bill we just heard. You wanted to have a televised hearing on that.
No, we will be out of the room.
I think this is the room.
Right. Thank you for the use of the hall.
Your bill will come later.
Mr. Olson, if you would be so kind as to remind us that House Bill 2763, House Resolution 3, and House Joint Resolution 29 pertain to, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2763 directs the Superintendent of Public Instruction to contract for the development of kindergarten through grade 12 Chinese language curriculum. It appropriates monies from the general fund to the Department of Education for this contract. Declares an emergency and becomes effective July 1st, 2007, if passed. And I note that this has in it the bill and appropriations for $350,000. And so it does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. You want to continue on?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Resolution 3 urges Oregon universities, community colleges, and secondary schools to encourage Oregon students to learn Mandarin Chinese and to explore opportunities to study in China. House Joint Resolution 29, members, expresses the need to expand foreign exchange programs for Oregon students to study abroad and to learn language and culture. Neither of the resolutions have any fiscal impact.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Dolan, I'm going to give you the gavel in just a few minutes.
Thank you.
Ask Representative Richardson's gavel to join me. Do a little business out there.
I'd like to close this one.
Good idea.
That's a good one. Good idea.
That's what game in a short time. That's it.
Yeah. Trying to game starts in 30 minutes.
I'll pass me a week.
Basketball game up on calling you.
Mr. Chair and intimidating members of the House Education Committee, for the record, I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing House District 5, South Jackson County. Thank you very much for hearing this bill, as if you had much choice in the matter. This is an idea that was brought forth by Representative Richardson and strongly supported by Senator Bates and the other members who we've discussed the idea with. Many of you are on the House Subcommittee on Higher Education, and we did hear some remarkable testimony about China, about the Chinese education system, about Oregon's relationship with China. And the case made in that committee hearing, for those who were present, was extremely compelling about our need to find the way to be a partner with China with its explosive growth, and the fact that we have so few Oregon students who are actually learning Chinese language. We will be at a severe disadvantage unless we do have citizens of the state of Oregon who can communicate in Chinese. It seems to be a very logical step for our state to take, and I will ask Representative Richardson's assistant to convey his thoughts to you.
Thank you. Members of the committee, my name is Peter Coyle, and I am the chief of staff for Representative Dennis Richardson, who represents District 4, a portion of Jackson and Josephine County, though probably not, well, maybe the better portion of Jackson County. I'd like to share with you some thoughts on Chinese language acquisition and my personal experience in attempting to learn Mandarin Chinese, but before I do that, I'd like to share some numbers and some facts with you. Chinese is the number one spoken language in the world. 870 million people speak it. In America, the Census Bureau reports that it is the third largest spoken language behind English and Spanish. Despite this, only 24,000 American middle and high school students study Mandarin Chinese, while more than 1 million speak French, a language only spoken by 75 million people. And I draw your attention to an article that I've attached to my testimony from Newsweek entitled Education, the Future Doesn't Speak French. And it is an article that discusses the population of Chinese language classes throughout America in some public school systems. And I think it would be very good to refer to some of their programs as we discuss this in the future. The United States Foreign Service Institute says that it takes 520 hours of instruction to reach a reasonable level of proficiency in French, whereas it takes 2,500 to reach the same level in Chinese. And according to Daniel Kane, who's a professor of Chinese and head of the Asian Studies Department at Macquarie University in Australia, says that a three-year university language course provides 500 hours of instruction, which is only about 20% of the time needed to reach the level of competence required of diplomats. And Chinese is a difficult language to learn on a couple levels, the first being that it does not have an alphabet like English or Russian. It requires the memorization of characters and the use of tones to distinguish between the meaning of words. And in fact, some of these same words that have the same tone actually have different character meaning. So there's a lot more to it than simply learning how to pronounce, say, Spanish or French. Recently, a young lady enrolled in the Portland International School passed the Chinese language proficiency exam. She's in fifth grade. That test is offered generally to adults, and she was one of 11 students that passed it, being only in fifth grade. And she has been enrolled in the school since she was in preschool. And I think that emphasizes locally the importance of Chinese language instruction beginning at a young age. Myself, I studied Mandarin Chinese for 6 weeks in Beijing as part of a study abroad program. We spent 16 hours a week in class learning the language and then 16 hours plus studying it on our own, practicing the things that we learned, pronunciation. We took trips to the market and attempted to buy things with our newly found vocabulary, which was unsuccessful. And I remember once trying to make change with a young lady, and I handed her a coin, which we don't have a comparison in America, but it's worth about 0.02 cents, and the product I was purchasing was worth more than that, and I remember she was rather indignant, and it was a mistake on my part, but had I been able to speak the language better, I would have understood why she was yelling at me. Luckily, I had a friend who was with me who was able to help, and I'll talk a little bit more about this friend in a little bit. I have recently been taking some Chinese classes during the interim in Medford Road Community College and here in Salem at Chemeketa Community College on the weekend and in the evenings, but I can tell you that is not the way to learn Chinese, simply an hour a week or 2 hours a week. My friend Katie that I mentioned was able to take Chinese at her middle and high school, And she was a person that our State of Vermont group depended on quite a lot for help in navigating China and communicating and translating. I talked with her. She currently is in China teaching Chinese at a school in southern China in Guizhou province. She teaches conversational English to, to young children. And she told me, we've discussed this on Instant Messenger since it's 12 plus hours ahead of schedule in China, that had she not had Chinese in middle and high school, she would not be at the level of proficiency despite her Chinese study in college. A couple of the other students in my study abroad group have gone back, one to teach English and another on a scholarship to learn some more Chinese. China is emerging in the world market faster, I think, than anyone predicted, especially with its membership in the World Trade Organization. A gentleman at the Economic Policy Institute says that China has, or America has, had an increase of our trade deficit from $6.2 billion in 1989 to $124 billion in 2003. During that same time, 1.5 million American jobs were displaced. In the last few years, the overall trade deficit of America has tripled to $764 billion. $233 billion of that is to China alone. As China hosts the Olympics in 2008, the world will be watching to see the changes that will come. I don't think the changes will be as monumental as democracy or some other aspects that some people think, but they will quicken their pace. And like Aesop's tortoise and the hare, they are not going to stop and take a nap and wait for the rest of the world to catch up. So in closing, I'd just like to say that we need a cohesive statewide strategy of increasing Chinese language in our young people in middle school and high school and elementary school in order to be successful in the future. It has been stated that we must build deep, broad, complex networks of government and civil society interaction, and we need robust people to lead multilateral efforts across all sectors of society. Having our future policymakers on a level playing field to understand the culture and language of this rising superpower will aid in commerce, travel, diplomacy, medicine, and education. In America, we've kept an educational system based on a 19th century philosophy of agriculture and reading, writing, and arithmetic. But that isn't good enough now as we go into the 21st century. We need to increase the language acquisition of our young people so they can compete in a global marketplace. To quote a Chinese proverb, one generation plants the tree and another gets the shade. The sooner we begin teaching our students Chinese, the sooner they'll be able to be successful in the world. And I think that House Bill 2763 does that by allocating the appropriate funding, beginning funding, I might add, to the Department of Education to begin this process. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Any questions? Everyone call.
This is for either of you. I'm very well versed in lived in-depth dual language acquisition programs in Woodburn School District for a number of years. How would this curriculum be any different than any other second language acquisition? There are 7 stages that are clearly defined in research and best practices. How is this different than any other language acquisition?
Sure. Representative Kump, the curriculum is to be developed by the Department of Education. This simply gives them the funding. So I don't know if I can answer specifically how this curriculum would be different. I would believe that by starting in kindergarten going through 12, I'm not sure of Woodburn's curriculum. I don't know if it begins in middle school or elementary school.
It's a K-12
okay.
Curriculum aligned. And the standards have been written for a number of years.
Okay, I'm not sure how this would mirror that or how this would change that.
My suggestion is, I doubt there'd be very little differences, but I don't know. I'm not an expert in it. I don't have my doctorate in linguistics, but
yeah.
If I can respond, Mr. Anderson, I believe Richardson Hunt Children go to a school that have a Chinese immersion program, and I'm assuming that the language programs you're talking about are also the immersion programs.
We have five different styles of language acquisition in Woodbury, from dual language to immersion to, yeah, there's multiple ways of teaching language. And so, like I say, the department has a wealth of curriculum and standards about second language acquisition already.
Excellent.
Not that I don't support increasing Chinese as part of that, because I really am a fervent believer of multiple language acquisition.
Thank you.
Just before I go to Representative Greenlake, our administrator would like to make a point of clarification.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things, Mr. Chair, Representative Comp. We have Pat Burke from the Department of Education who will be able to testify in a little bit, and he may be able to help shed some light on that point. Secondly, I note that this is modeled after something similar done in Minnesota. I don't know if you might want to amplify that, but...
I did not.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you.
And Representative Greenlake, get it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I live a rich fantasy life and encourage other people to live a rich fantasy life. Mr. Carlin, if you asserted your fantasies and imagined something really right happening between now and 20 years from now, how many people do you think... 20 years from now or 25 years from now, we would be fluent in Mandarin Chinese if we did the things of all three of these bills?
Representative Greenlake,
In Oregon, I mean.
The Asian Society has said that, I believe it's 20 years, they'd like to have 5% of the country fluent in Mandarin Chinese. So I don't know if this will reach that. If I had my druthers, I would like to see a program where at least one program in every school district where the students who want to learn Chinese can. I wouldn't begin to put a percentage or a number on that. I think success would be measured in perhaps doubling the amount in the next 10 years. My fantasy would be that. But I'd learn it in 20 years, but I'm not sure
that's going to happen. That's a good fantasy.
So I don't know if that answers your question.
Could I follow up just a moment?
Follow up, sure.
Assume we'll have, say, 5 million people in 20 years, and that would be 250,000. 5% would be, what did we say, 25,000 now?
Currently we have 24,000 in America.
Oh, in the whole country?
In the whole nation.
So the question is, could we imagine 10,000 people possibly?
I would say we'll not imagine that.
Okay.
I don't have an actual answer for you, and I don't mean to be flippant, but I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I like to tell the story about Napoleon, I think some of you heard that, having this vision of what this road would look like with these trees over, and he calls in his arborists and says, can you get to work on this road, because here's the way I want this road to look. And they said to him, well, it will take 100 years for it to look like that. And his answer was, well, let's start today. I mean, even the sense that we won't have 25,000 Oregonians speaking Mandarin shouldn't slow us down from trying to get as many as we can. I suppose that's the important message in that question.
Thank you, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank both of you for speaking today and excellent testimony, Peter. Both Peters. I hadn't thought about that. And I'll bring this up or ask Mr. Burke to comment on this too. I didn't bring it with me, but several months ago, was an article in the paper about Department of Defense willing to fund children starting kindergarten and studying Chinese, and I wonder if the Department of Education or you've looked into that.
We have not looked into that. It's a fantastic idea. I'd love to get some Defense Department money.
If I can say, I believe this bill was drafted prior to that announcement and that funding structure. But the more money, the better, I think. So.
Okay.
We have another point of clarification from our committee administrator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wisden, I should have mentioned earlier that in addition to Mr. Burke, we also have Carl Falsgraf from U of O, Center for Languages, who might be able to speak to these, as well as a couple other witnesses that may have some expertise on Mr. Porter and others who may have, Mr. Wilner may have some be able to shed some light on that.
Any other questions for our two witnesses? Pardon me, Representative Lim.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Do you know how many dialects we have in China?
Representative Lim, I believe there are 9 major dialects,
okay.
And there are regional variations, but I believe that there are 9 major dialects.
Okay, follow up. So if you're talking about the 9 major dialects, then you mentioned in the bill Chinese language. Are you including all of it, or do you mean the Mandarin?
Vice Chair Dowling, Representative Lim, the intent is Mandarin Chinese, because that is the official state language of China, and that is spoken by 870 million people. The next major dialect, I believe, is I'm not sure whether it's Wu or Cantonese, but that is spoken by in comparison, a minuscule amount compared to 870 million. So the intent is Mandarin Chinese, and I would be remiss if I said I don't know if the bill specifies that or not.
It does not.
I would recommend perhaps that we make that correction if that needs to happen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions? If not, I'd like to thank you both very much for opening up the testimony on these three pieces of legislation.
Pat Burke and Carl Falsgraf, would you be willing to come up and provide some information? Thank you, Representative
Dahl.
Thank you. Representative Lim, thank you very much for pointing that out, that we didn't have that specified manner.
Thanks, Carl.
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, I'm Pat Burke. I'm the Chief Policy Officer of the Department of Education. We are pleased to come before you this morning this afternoon to support House Bill 2763. We have already provided the committee a position paper, more of a planning document from the department. It's the same document that we used in our testimony before the House Subcommittee on Higher Education on this same topic. It's provided a lot of information on some of the current activity at the Department of Education. I won't go through all of that. Now. Commend it to your reading. But we certainly join with others that you've already heard from today and in prior testimony about the importance of fostering Chinese language acquisition among our students. We support the concept in the bill of this being a K-12 strategy linked to higher education. We also support, obviously, the idea of building cultural understanding across Oregon with a variety of cultures, including the culture of China. And what we have been doing a lot of work on is creating opportunities for the exchange of teachers and students in Oregon. We also are very aware of the commercial impact, manufacturing impact, and the agricultural impact in preparing Oregon students to be competitive in these rapidly changing markets, and the importance of building international understanding among our students. Areas that we have been working on, as I mentioned, was in the area of teacher exchanges. We are very aware of the excellent programs, particularly those that the Higher Education Subcommittee heard from within the university system. Outstanding partner to my left, Carl, in the program, the Oregon Flagship Program at the University of Oregon. The committee also heard from Oregon State University and from Portland State University. We're also aware of an emerging online Mandarin program being worked on at Western Oregon University. In other words, there is a lot of activity in our state currently underway, which we find very exciting. The bill directs us to manage a contract, and the contract would be fairly complex, and it involves the development of curriculum and also areas of material exchanges and teacher exchanges and student exchanges and travel within the state of Oregon. The question from Representative Comp about to what target would we be looking at, that is something that we would welcome an opportunity to work with the interagency partnership or contract that this bill envisions. Currently, as Representative Comp knows, most of our second language programs use the American Council of Teachers of Foreign Language Proficiency Scale as the method of targeting our expected outcomes. In the languages that are considered the cognate languages, the Latin base, French, Spanish, Italian, we generally target what's known as the intermediate mid-level as an expected outcome. What that basically means is a student being able to speak in a present tense in a complete sentence and to be able to answer unprompted questions, usually in present tense. So we use that sort of as a benchmark, but that benchmark primarily focuses at the high school level. So when we're talking about a K-12 program of an integrated curriculum, we would want to work with our partners to clarify what an expected outcome would be. We would expect that that outcome would be even higher than that level. And in our programs currently in Japanese and the other non-cognate languages, we tend to, our standards are slightly below that. The non-cognate languages are much more complex. I'm also aware that sitting next to me is one of not only the states, but the nation's true experts in this area. So Carl will correct any mistake that I just made in my testimony. But the as Representative Comp also said, there are a variety of instructional methods here. We have programs in the state already that use full immersion in Mandarin Chinese beginning in first grade and continuing into middle school. That is the type of program that can have a very high level of attainment, but that may not be the only method of K-12 instruction that we would look at. What the bill envisions is that we would study that and prepare recommendations, and we would welcome an opportunity to do the inventory that the bill calls for and to begin to prepare for you a very good picture of what's available and what might be worth considering in the future. Let me just add one concern about the bill. If you look at what we're currently doing plus the what is envisioned in the bill, we currently have 0.3 FTE in the agency devoted to second language and international relations. We already have teacher exchange programs with Mexico, Japan, and Spain. This would add potentially a new teacher exchange program. We handle a lot of the visa programs. If you're aware of the J-1 visa, this gets a little complex in helping teachers come to Oregon to work. There are housing and payment and insurance and a variety of details that are part of this. So in addition to managing the contract, if we also envision increasing that level of interaction, we would respectfully request that some consideration be given to position authority to the agency to manage the contract and the international teacher work that we're currently doing. Other than that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop there. We, as I said, support the bill and are very excited about the opportunity to work on it.
Thank you, Ben. Questions? Representative Lynch.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. While we are trying to obtain and learn Chinese languages such as Mandarin, we shouldn't, there could be a comment, we shouldn't forget that we have many thousands of people from China already speaking Chinese, already they know how to write, then the culture, we need to best utilize the talents we have. And also, can I ask one more question? One question such as, I heard that Mandarin is a Chinese official language. Is that correct? Okay, then my question is follow-up question. Why couldn't we, our country, hasn't have an official language? And can you respond to that?
Representative Buckley, Representative Lim, the United States does not have the constitutional authority, in my opinion, to impose an official language on each state. There are some states under state constitutions that have adopted English as an official, quote-unquote, state language. I believe there has been, in the history of public education, more of a desire to look at our schools as being welcome and open to any student from any country, from any language. We, of course, try to teach English to every student that that comes to us, but there's also the opportunity in our schools to learn the languages of other cultures. I can't give you beyond that a rationale of why the United States government has not officially done that. There have been attempts, there have been bills before Congress to make English the quote-unquote official language of the United States. To my knowledge, none have ever gotten very far in the legislative process.
Just one more question, Mr. Chair.
Short question?
Short question. This bill mentions K-12. As a matter of fact, the younger, the better for them to learn. And I'm not sure whether K-12 is the proper language. The psychologist is telling when they are reached 5, already their learning capacity already maximized. So it's much better when they learn the youngest instead of the K-12. Just a question and comment.
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, I certainly agree that the sooner the better in this case. We know from our Chinese, Spanish, and Japanese immersion programs from around the state that, as I mentioned, that target of being at an intermediate mid-level on that ACTFL scale, if you use that as a standard, we know that many of the K-5 immersion programs have students exiting fifth grade already at that standard and higher. So we know that if we can get students early, they can make considerable progress in the acquisition of a language. The state standard is a four-part standard. Our language standards include reading, writing, speaking, and understanding of the language. And certainly we know that if we take that comprehensive approach, the earlier we start, the better. We don't teach children from birth. Their parents do. One of the things that we would hope to be able to do in a program like this, as you mentioned, there are many Chinese-speaking people in the state currently, and it would be delightful to be able to continue their home language into a school program so that they could continue to learn Chinese as well as learn English in our schools and develop more bilingual students.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Yes, Mr. Berglund. The first step, as outlined in the law and as you've outlined, is to build the curriculum, and ODE would be involved in that. Then, I'm overwhelmed with the size of the project and what we need. What then would be the second step for ODE? You have the curriculum, now what do we do with it?
Representative Buckley, Representative Dahlem, it's an excellent question. The bill talks about conducting the plan and designing the curriculum and the program. I think, and that's easily in multiple years of work. At that point, I think we would then also have to begin to focus on an implementation strategy. That would require looking at the capacity of local districts to offer second languages, the ability to attract teachers, which we are very concerned about. This is a complex language, as Representative Lynn pointed out, and with multiple dialects. One of the reasons that we have gone into the area of teacher exchanges with Mexico, Japan, and Spain is frankly we can't find as many second language teachers as we need in these languages. So just for your information, Oregon is second in the United States in terms of teacher exchanges with Mexico. We're second only behind California, and we have an excellent relationship with the Mexican government in bringing teachers from Mexico to help us. We would look to I believe some of you are aware that Superintendent Castillo has already traveled to China in her capacity as a board member with the Council of Chief State School Officers. We have been in contact with the Ministry of Education in China about the area of teacher exchanges, and it is our desire to continue to work in that area. So what I see emerging, Representative Dollins, we have a better idea of what we would like to teach, and a delivery system, perhaps looking at different instructional methodologies that would come from the work of the partnership. And at that point, we would then be developing an implementation around who should teach it and the capacity of local districts to pay for it.
Thank you very much.
Pat, just one question. When you mentioned teacher exchange and the staffing level you have currently, were you suggesting that you would like to change the language of this bill in some way to reflect that?
Chair Buckley, either in the bill or perhaps in the referral to Ways and Means, but however, at the convenience of the committee, it's pretty clear to us that at 0.3 FTE, we can't do everything that's in this bill, and that we would respectfully request position authority for position to manage the bill.
Thank you. Is it Dr. or Mr.?
You can call me Carl.
Dr. Mr. Carl, it's welcome.
For the record, my name is Carl Falsgraf. I am the director of the Center for Applied Second Language Studies at the University of Oregon, and I do have a doctorate in linguistics, if that's important to the committee. I'm particularly pleased today that I was called up together with my colleague, Pat Burt. The area of language teaching, language acquisition, is one area in which I believe that University of Oregon, OUS in general, and the Oregon Department of Education have collaborated very effectively over the past 12 years that I've been involved in this effort, and I'm very excited that this bill sets a framework for us to continue doing that in the area of Mandarin Chinese. I don't think, based on the discussions that we've had so far, that I have to do a lot of convincing on the importance of China and the importance of Chinese language, but one in four jobs in Oregon is directly reliant on exports. That's exports only, not trade in general. And 57% of those exports are to the Asian region. The Oregon Progress Board, however, reported that on benchmark 17, which relates to the number of foreign language speakers we need to have an effective economy and a cohesive society, they give a grade of D to Oregon in how many second language speakers we're producing. So clearly, there's an issue here across the board in languages, and particularly in Mandarin Chinese. To compete, we need to know the competition. In order to partner, we need to build relationships. In order to sell, we need to know the customer. All of those functions require language and cultural abilities. I believe that Representative Comp referred to a number of methodologies and a number of curricular models that are very effective. Woodburn is a leader in this. Portland Public Schools is also a leader in this. And at the Center for Applied Second Language Studies, we've worked with a number of districts, both in Oregon and around the country. I believe we have the right methodologies, we have the right resources to really produce Oregonians who are able to speak Chinese at a very high level. I heard it said after the last time I addressed the subcommittee on higher education that, well, everybody speaks English. Is this really so important? And I would like to comment, first of all, that not everybody does speak English. In China, Japan, Korea, and the Middle East, which represents more than half the population of the world, far fewer than 10% of the people speak English with any facility whatsoever. I would also add that when you are the buyer, you could probably speak English. When you are the seller, however, you'll have to speak the language of your customer. I would like to discuss with the committee some of the resources that we already have in place. This money that is being discussed is a relatively small amount of money for the large ambitions, the fantasies that we all have for this, but that is only a piece of the pie. My own center, the Center for Applied Second Language Studies, has an annual budget of $2.3 million. I'm very glad that we have a representative from the U.S. Department of Education, which provides the vast majority of that $2.3 million. Thank you very much for your continued support. I would also like to add that about $1 million of that does come from the Department of Defense. I heard that that was mentioned as a potential source of funds. The fact that part of our funding comes from Department of Defense and part of our funding comes from the Department of Education illustrates the fact that this is an issue that goes across the board. If we were talking about Japan, we would probably be talking exclusively about commercial interests. If we were talking about Arabic, we would probably be talking exclusively about defense-related interests. In the case of China, there are national security concerns, there are diplomatic concerns, there are commercial concerns. This need is not going to go away anytime soon. It was mentioned earlier that we have a language flagship program here in Oregon. This is a program that is a joint program between Portland Public Schools and the University of Oregon. We receive approximately $1 million a year from the Department of Defense to fund this. The funds are split fairly evenly between Portland and the University of Oregon. We have developed, or I should say are in the process of developing a curriculum for this. Some of the challenges relate to the uniqueness of the Chinese language. So it would be very difficult, for example, to take the Spanish language immersion curriculum that you have in Woodburn and apply that to Chinese because of linguistic differences and cultural differences and so forth, and we are working on that. The aim of this flagship program is to provide a steady stream of students at the professional level of competence. Pat mentioned earlier that the goal for high school is intermediate mid. Our goal usually for college majors in a language like Chinese would be at what we call the advanced level. Our goal for immersion students is also at the advanced level. In other words, in this program that we have in Portland Public Schools, we're going to produce high school seniors who are beyond the level of college majors. Then they enter the University of Oregon, and we take them up to what's called the superior level, which means you can do things like negotiate contracts, you can do accounting, you can conduct diplomacy, you can conduct business, you can interpret, those sorts of high-level skills where you're really totally fluent in both languages. Also on April 25th and 27th, we have 100 language teachers and administrators from around the country coming to Portland to attend a workshop that's sponsored jointly by Portland Public Schools and the University of Oregon. They're coming here to look at our model. We're the leader in this, and again, 100 people are spending their own money and paying some money to us to come to this workshop. I only mention that as a way of indicating the kind of expertise that we do have here, the kind of budding infrastructure that we have that can support the effort that you are discussing here. I'd also like to mention that my organization, the Center for Applied Second Language Studies, started out as a very small project 12 years ago. That project was for Japanese language only. I'm a Japanese speaker myself. The purpose was to develop curriculum assessments, professional development programs, and to network teachers of Japanese. So we've done this before. When we started, Japanese was not too far off from the level at which Chinese is taught in the state right now. So we have some experience in how to do this. And right now, Oregon is known around the country as one of the best places in the country to study Japanese. So I I'm confident that if this bill goes through, that we can work with our colleagues in the Department of Education to make this a success. I think we have the experience. We have the ongoing relationship to make that go smoothly. I would like to add, I was pleased and surprised when I read in the bill that my organization was mentioned specifically by name. We didn't ask to do that, but it's an honor to be mentioned there. I would just like to add that, you know, we would certainly want to have an open and free process if a contract is awarded. First of all, because that's the way things ought to be done. And second of all, we wouldn't want any cloud over our head that there was some sort of favoritism. A couple things that I heard mentioned, I was taking notes in the back of the room, that in terms of the number of students that we may be able to expect, both realistically and in our fantasy life, in 1985, 20 years ago, in Japanese, we had only a few dozen students studying Japanese in the state. Right now, at the K-12 level, we have something like 3,000. That's in that period, of course, Japan really rose as an economic power. It's also fallen a bit as an economic power. We had as many as 4,000 a few years ago when Japan was much more in the news. I don't think it's unrealistic to expect something like 5,000 students of Chinese or something like that in 10 years if we do a good job and if the resources are available. Something else that was mentioned by Representative Lim was using the linguistic resources we have here in the state. Our best guess looking at census figures is there are around 10,000 Oregonians who speak Chinese. We don't know if that's Mandarin, Cantonese, and so forth. It's a complex issue. But those 10,000 people are an extremely valuable resource. The first class of flagship scholars that that are now at the University of Oregon as freshmen, all of them are heritage speakers. We're waiting for the immersion students. The oldest are now in eighth grade in Portland Public School. So in 5 years, we'll see them as well. So these nine people who really truly do represent the best and brightest that Oregon has to offer, they're wonderful kids. If you ever get a chance to come down and meet them, I hope you have the opportunity to do that. So we're very aware of those resources. Franklin High School in Portland Public Schools has a special program. It's called the World Language Institute. Its purpose is to maintain and increase the linguistic resources that exist within that community, primarily Spanish, Chinese, and Russian. So we're very aware of that. I would also add that that is a very promising source of teaching talent as well. Teaching is a very attractive profession for people, particularly from Chinese culture, where education and teachers are so revered. I think that that may be a strategy, along with importing teachers from China, that they could help meet the demand that that we expect over the next few years. Finally, I'd just like to thank you all for having me here again. I appreciate it. Please don't hesitate to contact me to work together. I hope that we can make Oregon the kind of environment where the world feels at home and where we feel at home in the world. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And members, we do have several more people who wish to testify on these three bills, just so you know. Representative Dolan.
I would like to, hearing the model of the Japanese immersion program, and hearing that this one could be like that, the task doesn't sound so daunting. What was the relationship between yourself, Portland Public Schools, and ODE? How did that work?
On the Japanese project?
Yes.
We got our funding in 1994 to begin. The first person I met with after I started the job on September 16th, I met with the foreign language coordinator in the Oregon Department of Education. At that time, it was Elizabeth King. And I've worked very closely with the, the point three foreign language coordinator that they have had ever since. They've had three people in that position. They've all been terribly overworked individuals because they have other responsibilities. But we've been partners on that from the very beginning. Portland Public Schools, we also had a relationship from the very beginning, particularly with the Japanese immersion school, but also with the traditional programs that start in middle school or high school and teach Japanese as a second language. I'm sure most of you are aware, But in an immersion program, you don't really teach the language. You teach through the language. And it's part of the miracle of our brains, especially when you're young. You don't have to tell children, this is a noun, this is a verb, here's the proper way to say things. If you're teaching a kindergarten colors and numbers and how to line up and keep your hands off the kid next to you in Chinese, mm-hmm. they learn Chinese or Japanese or Spanish or whatever the language may be. We found that at the higher levels, there is a bit of a challenge. And this is something that we really worked with on Portland Public Schools in Eugene, which also has a Japanese immersion program. When students get to the middle and high school level, their cognitive level is so high, they have to be able to read in Japanese or Chinese or Spanish, the equivalent of a textbook in algebra, for example. That's a huge challenge in Chinese. It'll be a huge challenge in Japanese again. As Mr. Coyle mentioned earlier, the character system presents special challenges that we don't have in European languages. To get back to your question, the relationship with the Department of Education and with Portland Public Schools is at least 12 years old, has been productive throughout, and continues to be so.
Thank you. Representative Cobb.
Thank you, Chair. And it's not necessarily a question, but just a little bit of information to the committee. And I'm taking some of this discussion very personal because as an educator in Woodbridge School District since 1990, we currently have at least, I don't have exact figures, but over 3,000 students in our tiny little community that are learning a second language. And so this is about second language acquisition. In fact, the bill is very clear that this is about defining a curriculum, not increasing international trade or anything else. It's about a curriculum. My only comment, because I have an appointment that I would love, I'm going to be late to now, but some of the best curriculum comes from the nations in which we want to speak with. They have a clearly written curriculum for their students already, and that curriculum already involves knowing how to speak, read, and write. In any district that does any less for their students in any language is doing a disservice, because it's not, as stated by our good authorities right here, it's really not enough just to have conversational language. You need to know how to understand contracts, talk about economic development. You need to be able to write to your colleagues. And so this is an incredibly, incredibly important discussion. But all I know is sometimes the best place to look for curriculum, whether it's French, whether it's German, whether it's Japanese, whether it's Spanish, you can talk to the consulates in those countries, and their curriculum is well defined as ours is as English speakers in our countries. And what comes with that is a wealth of their methodology also, and we could not survive in many of our schools right now, whether it's Portland or us or Medford, where you hear of a lot of good second language programs, without the teachers from these other countries to come help us out. They are our absolute best sources, and we're just wonderful, wonderful people to work with. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. So we will not move on this bill in your absence. I want to make sure you're part of the discussion.
Well, I don't have any problems, you know, with moving the bill. Right. It's just that, just the thought that we need to utilize all the resources without reinventing a wheel.
Very good. Then we'll see where we get to. Thank you.
As you're going out of the room, Representative Kong, could I make one comment? I have an appointment on April 16th and 17th in Beijing with the Ministry of Education to talk with them about developing curriculum and assessment instruments together.
Awesome.
So we're
that's
on the same page.
About.
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative
Dean.
Yes, if you'll indulge an idle curiosity with a brief question since you're a linguist. It was within my lifetime, I think, that the Japanese character set, the ideograms, were converted into Latinate. And I expect that sort of helped us. It may have helped us learn Japanese at that point. Has there been anything like that with the Chinese character set? And would that help or hinder our acquisition of that language?
Well, actually, for both languages, there is a way to render them in a Latin alphabet. However, people in China and people in Japan hardly ever use those. Those are for our benefit. If you want to read what Japanese people are writing for Japanese people or what Chinese people are writing for Chinese people, you need to know those characters. In some programs, especially when you start later in life, in high school or college level, for a few weeks or months, the teacher may use that phonetic rendering of Japanese or Chinese.
And the same thing is true in Hebrew.
Yes.
The same issues.
Exactly. But when you start with small children, there's no need to do that. They don't know their alphabet and they don't know their characters. So if you start with characters, they absorb those and also learn their English. By the way, one thing that's been questioned, I've gotten the question very often in immersion programs, they say, well, what happens to the kids' English if they're spending half their day or more in Chinese or Japanese? We have solid research from both here, Canada, and Europe saying that you actually score higher in your native language if you spend half of your day in another language. It sounds counterintuitive at first, but it seems that the areas of the brain that process language are strengthened by learning two languages, so you get better at doing things like inferencing and so forth by the exposure to two languages.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Doctor, before we had you leave the chair there, would you like to comment since you're here on the resolutions? Do you have specific things you wanted to say on those?
I feel strongly that those are a step in the right direction. I particularly like we've only been talking about Chinese here primarily, but the one resolution mentions languages in general, and I don't think we should forget that there are many other countries in the world besides China. We have a number of residents in Oregon who speak Russian, who speak Spanish, who speak a number of languages, and our relationships with those countries are very important too. So I particularly welcome that aspect of the, I believe it's the joint resolution.
Thank you, Dr. Foss. Yeah. Thank you very much for your time and your work, and we look forward to continuing our work with you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pat. Could we have Dave Porter and Bob Wilner step forward? Clarifying comment from our administrator.
Thanks, Chair. The community system is passing out some written testimony on the two resolutions for people that might be able to testify in person, just for the record.
These are good.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Thank you.
You go ahead. Welcome, Mr. Porter.
Chairman Buckley and members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Dave Porter, and I'm just Dave Porter. I don't have an organization behind me here. I'm retired. I want to thank the chairman and the committee for having these bills up and for having the hearing on the higher ed before, and for your patience and thoughtfulness on all the emails I've sent you so far. I have a fairly short, I don't know what else, shorter than it might be otherwise, testimony, but there are two other documents I'd like introduced into the record and they're being passed out. One is a longer proposal developing the China connection through educational programs, which is very similar to a proposal Representative Richardson and I submitted to the Oregon Business Plan, and which is still under some consideration by them. There is a flyer that you may have already seen, the China briefing. The issue is China. And are we preparing today's students in Oregon for the challenges and opportunities that a rising China will pose over their lifetimes? The answer is, I believe, not at all. Consider the scale of the challenges. Columnist Thomas Friedman wrote that when the history of this era is written, the trend that historians will cite as the most significant will not be 9/11 and the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. It will be the rise of China and India. Columnist Nicholas D. Kristof wrote, "I'm a believer in China, and I think it will end this century as the most important country in the world." Scholar Jeffrey Sachs advised Americans to prepare for a world where by the year 2050, China's economy could be 75% bigger than our own. China will be the most important pivotal security relationship for the U.S. in the 21st century. War, peace, prosperity, pandemics, terrorism, and global warming all turn on U.S.-China relations. What is at stake for us and for our children is simply too big to continue to avoid. Put those thoughts on the future with where Oregon is now. Currently, less than 1% of Oregon high school graduates have had 2 years of moral manhood. While some expansion is underway, it is unlikely to reach 2% soon. At the university level, less than 2% of the undergraduates, as we heard at the hearing, at the U of O, OSU, and PSU now study Mandarin. During the 2003-04 academic year, only 35 of the 79,000 students in the Oregon University system studied abroad in China. These are not the statistics of an educational system preparing students for the 21st century or to engage a rising China constructively. We have done little to address the biggest issue of the 21st century. We must begin to change what we are doing. House Resolution 3, House Joint Resolution 29, and House Bill 2763 are all positive steps in the direction we need to go. Oregon needs to invest in developing more mentoring programs for its students K through 16, featuring not the 2 years of high school foreign languages of the past, but more programs that produce fluent speakers able to function professionally in languages, in two languages and cultures. Fortunately, we know generally how to do this. Start young, immerse the student, and have them spend time in the foreign culture. Oregon has a few public and private language immersion programs that start in kindergarten. The U of O Center for Applied Second Language Studies, as you've heard, together with the Portland Public Schools, had a federal grant to develop a national model for K through 16 Mandarin curriculum. The International School in Portland, which is private, has produced fifth graders able to pass the Chinese government's Mandarin exam for admission to a Chinese university. We know what to do K through 5 and just need to do more of it. We need further work to find ways to make immersion and heritage programs work in the middle schools and high schools. We need more entry Mandarin programs after the elementary years. We need distant learning Mandarin programs for students in districts without Mandarin classes. We need to develop teacher exchange programs. And most important, we need to find ways to send many, many more students, high school and college, to China to study. So we have much work to do. H.R. 3 and House Joint Resolution 29 and House Bill 2763 are a good start. We will need to do much more in the future. I dream of an Oregon that does more, an Oregon that sends this message to other states, to China, and to the rest of the world. Oregon understands the challenges of the 21st century. We may not like them, but we see them clearly, and we will meet them. And then I dream further that those future historians of Tom Friedman, as they write their histories of this era, will note that Oregon had a generation of leaders, writing of us, with vision who acted boldly to provide the tipping point for a century of global peace and prosperity. Our children deserve this from us. Thanks for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Purdy. You are a one-man organization, just so we have that clear. Mr. Willard.
Chairman Buckley, members of the committee, make this brief. It's basically a philosophical digression, but I hope it encourages things. My name is Bob Luner, Executive Director of the Oregon International Council, in which capacity I've been working for the past 25 years to help strengthen international education, the international dimension of education in Oregon. On that basis, I'm delighted to see the action proposed here. I hope the current proposal will, in fact, maintain its momentum on a long-term basis rather than be thought of by anyone as a one-time magic bullet. I see no reason here to worry about that, but it's always in the back of my mind.
And that right, I would like to offer some commentary derived from my prior experience in the Foreign Service and from the thoughts of my most esteemed colleague, who I never met but always admired greatly, George Kennan. I don't know how well he's known now, but he was the person who in 1947 published an essay on containment of the Soviet Union, predicting that if we follow this policy and remain true to our own goals and principles, we can expect to see the collapse of Soviet power. And he lived to see that happen 44 years later. He died just a few years ago. But in view of that success, I'd like to take another quote from his philosophy, which I think is more relevant directly to this program. When he talked about diplomacy in general, he emphasized that it's a business not for engineers, but for gardeners. And that, I think, applies to education, at least as directly, as it does to any exercise in human development. And I think basically you have to accept that we can provide a lot of inputs and influence the outcome. We cannot control it. We have to provide also incentives to get things to work out the way we do. And we have to bear in mind that education, if we apply the agricultural image, education is more like raising an orchard than raising a crop of wheat. It takes years. And a couple of orchardists I know have also noted that their trees bear better if they have been stressed. And I think that leads us to some other considerations in educational policy. I will confess, having been a liberal all my life, I'm conservative in one respect. I believe in rigorous examinations for students. And I hope the legislature will approve some serious educational standards, not only in language, but across the board, to prepare our coming generations for the societal, scientific, and burdens and economic burdens that all of them will face. And I thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen.
Excellent.
Thank you both very much for your testimony. Appreciate it greatly. Representative Cannon, would you care to probably step down, Chair? My apologies for not welcoming you to the full education committee today. It's a pleasure to see you here.
As soon as we finish, Mr. Chair, I'm going to do some pruning in the orchard. If anyone wants to test that theory, we're going to stress out some trees.
I'm stressed enough already. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the invitation to sit with the committee today. I am Representative Ben Cannon, serving House District 46 in parts of northeast and southeast Portland. My district contains several miles of the Avenue of Roses, which you may know better as 82nd Avenue. It is the home to many of the Chinese businesses in Portland. And is the sort of new Chinatown of Portland. I am supporting these bills. I introduced with Dave Porter the House resolution that's in front of you. You've heard lots of testimony today, and I will keep this very brief because I don't think I have much to add to the experts who have already spoken. But there are a couple of points that haven't been illuminated, I don't think in quite the detail that they could be, and one has to do with this idea of traveling and studying abroad. I lived and studied abroad for 3 years. Now, I had the good fortune to study and live in England, where language was not the considerable issue that it would be in China. However, there are certain results of a study and living abroad experience that I think are extraordinary, and they have to do with the kinds of relationships that you build as a student abroad with people from another culture, from another country, the kind of perspective that you gain on your home country, the kind of perspective that you gain on the world. And through my study and travel opportunities, I think that I learned a great deal about myself, about the world, and about my home country. And those are things that can't be captured by tests. It's not measured in language learning alone, but rather in sort of the other dimensions of the human mind and heart. So I'd ask that we keep that value in mind. The other thing I wanted to mention was just that when we're looking at language instruction, and particularly immersion, especially in younger grades. I think the value of teaching in context and teaching in a cultural context is really, really important. And there's a small group of students at my school who meet after school to learn Mandarin Chinese, and they have an instructor, and it's all on a voluntary basis, and it's just a few of them, ranging from a kindergartner to a seventh grader. And at the same time, they're also getting some experience in calligraphy, some experience in music and in art, also from China. And I think that dimension adds a great deal to the pure language instruction, and it's worth keeping in mind. I will conclude by saying a couple of things about the Portland Public Schools programs that you've heard mentioned a couple of times, and most importantly, and Dave Porter actually mentioned this, or brought this to my attention, the fact that in Woodstock Elementary, which has Portland Public's only elementary school immersion program, where the students really are not learning Mandarin Chinese in a separate class, they're learning math and art and other core subjects through Mandarin as well as English, there were 110 applicants for 60 slots in their last class. So there is a real demand for this program, and I think that's true not just in the Woodstock and its neighborhoods, but throughout the city of Portland. I've certainly heard it from some of my constituents. So I would urge you to support these three great bills, and thank you for your attention today.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bonamici, good to see you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Suzanne Bonamici, representative for House District 34, which is in Washington County. And I apologize that I don't have all the background of the earlier testimony, but I've been next door trying to solve problems with construction defects. I came to support specifically House Joint Resolution 29, but I'd like to speak in general about some of the issues that Representative Cannon was just talking about the benefits of learning and studying another language, as well as travel abroad. I served as a parent in the Beaverton School District on a committee that studied for about a year the benefits of language immersion. We did factual and academic research about language immersion programs across the country. We made a proposal to a site council at an elementary school that a language immersion program be started. We didn't even pick a language because we saw the benefits of language learning, not a specific language. In fact, the site council originally selected French, but when they heard from parents that they had studied French in high school and only used it when they read their shampoo bottles in the shower, they switched it to Spanish. But what we found along the way of doing this research was that children who learn content-based language instruction, as Representative Cannon was explaining, learning the subject matter in the target language or the other language, they gain great benefits beyond the actual, they learn much quicker and much more thoroughly than just learning Spanish or French or Mandarin Chinese. It puts the language learning in a context, and it's very difficult for some adults to comprehend if they've never studied another language as a child, because for adults have a much harder time learning a second language. If you, as an adult, have ever studied another language, you know that. But children before the age of about 11 or 12, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating earlier testimony, the circuits in their brain are more open and they can learn languages simultaneously. And so we did begin the program, and my daughter was in from second through sixth grade, a program where she learned her math, science, and social studies in Spanish. I'm a strong supporter of language immersion programs. When we made our proposal, it was during the time right after Measure 5 passed, and so there was also the consideration of funding, because with language immersion programs, you don't need an additional teacher, you just need a bilingual teacher, so you don't have an additional teacher. Sometimes there are challenges of finding teachers, and you may have heard testimony about that, especially with things like Mandarin Chinese or Japanese. And I also want to put a plug in for the Portland District's Richmond Elementary School, which is nationally recognized for a Japanese immersion program. So I strongly support more language immersion programs. And I also want to talk briefly about the ability to study abroad to learn language and culture and the benefits that come from from that.
Just I'm sorry to interrupt that. We have very little time. So
okay,
if you can condense that.
I will. I'm sorry. At the risk of being anecdotal, two experiences briefly. My own, it wasn't until college, but I studied a semester in Perugia, Italy, and it was truly a life-changing opportunity for me, increased my interest in the world and in studying language. And then my children, because our school that actually implemented the Spanish immersion program also had an exchange with the Kato school in Numazu, Japan. And we hosted children from the Kato school several years. And then my son and I actually had the opportunity to travel to Japan, where he spent 10 days as a student in fifth grade in the Kato school. And again, a life-changing experience to be able to be in another culture, to see that people don't all think, act, and live like we do, expands horizons beyond anything that we can learn in our own classrooms. And I'll close briefly with what I hope is a joke that will no longer be funny after these bills pass. Because I noticed that here, where it talks about American citizens being the least proficient in foreign languages compared to the rest of the world, you all know what you call somebody who speaks three languages, trilingual. Somebody who speaks two languages is bilingual, and somebody who speaks one language is American. So. Thank you very much. I do support these bills. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for students, and I hope they'll really support them.
Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Representative.
A quick question from my colleague.
Certainly. Representative, do you want to come up and join the council?
Go ahead. Yes, Representative Bonamici, you implemented this program in Beaverton. What did you use for curriculum? Where did you get it?
A lot of the curriculum was the district for math, for example. They were adopting a new math curriculum. They simply ordered the materials in Spanish. And then the teachers did develop a lot of the curriculum themselves, and they worked with other Spanish immersion programs to get the curriculum.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Representatives.
Chair Buckley, one final comment. I also urge us to adopt the Chinese reverence for teachers, where I understand that the teacher of the year in China goes on tour and to sold-out auditoriums where he delivers a lesson, and I think it is typically he, but perhaps she as well, delivers a lesson to standing room only crowds and sort of rock star status. So not just a certificate on a wall, a full-fledged like rock star tour. So.
Representative Kane, all I can say is Representative Greenick has competition in terms of fantasy life.
Thank you.
Yes, he did.
As you referred to this morning, Senator Representative Lin.
Thank you, Chair Buckley and members of the committee. And for the record, my name is John Lin, State Representative, or Senate Rep, sometimes they call me, from the Gresham area. My remarks will be very short. Already previous two representatives and others have already spoken eloquently before my bill, but I want you to know I didn't ask them to speak in behalf of me. They come voluntarily, and I was surprised having that degree of support. We call Chinese a sleeping giant. They are now waking up. As a matter of fact, they woke up while America is going to sleep. And I'm going to wake America up. America has been complacent. Many people around the world and students came here to study. So we didn't need necessarily learn other languages, but that is not the case. And we need to learn other languages if we want to make a big difference in trade. We already heard the 2763 and then SJR3 and SJR29. I believe, in my opinion, my SJR29 will be superior than the previous 2 years. I will tell you why. My bill is all inclusive. It's not defining just one country. Every country is inclusive. If you want to learn that the you just cannot learn the language alone. You need to learn the culture of the country. The only way you can do it, we need to send our children to abroad. Korea, that we have 50,000 Korean young men, high school, college, they are here to study. That's a lot. And how many students are we sending to abroad? I don't have the data, but we are the lowest compared to other countries. If we want to teach our children, learn that country of that country, then we need to send them to their country. Learning the language is not enough. We need to teach them their culture, about the people, about the country, and all about things. That's the only way you can learn. We need to send our country to each different country. So my bill talks about exchanging, also sending our children to other country. I don't believe I have any opposition from anyone that the HJR 29. I hope you have a work session today, send that strong message to other people. And I was going to use that joke she was going to use, so you know, surely I'm not going to repeat that. As a matter of fact, I heard that joke from the Representative Bellin some time ago.
Making the rounds. Representative, thank you so much. If you'll join us back here, I will close the public hearings and we will do a work session on your joint resolution.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cromwell?
I'm wondering, and I know this feels a little wrench in the monkey works here, but I'm wondering if on House, if on HJR 29, would it be a good idea to make a little bit of a stronger statement than what we have in the resolve clause? And what I would, I guess, propose is something along the lines of encourage our universities, both public and private, to promote and provide increased international studies, including exchange programs. And we could even certainly include our public schools in that. The reason why I say that, Mr. Chair, is because our city that I live in, Wilsonville, we have a sister city in Japan. We also have a school exchange program where a student from Kitakata comes over to Wilsonville and goes to school in our high school or junior high for a year, and we have a student that goes over there. The system works very well, and it has changed not only the lives of the students, but it changes the lives of the host families. And I know because we split a student with another family where she spent half the year with us. Anyway, she spent half the year with us and half the year with another family, and it was the greatest experience we've ever had. And so I just, you know, I would like to encourage those kinds of things. And I don't know if Representative Lim is inclined to, if you want to work it today and move it out, I will vote to move it out.
Mr. Chair, and I think since the time is waning, it's much better to move out, and I'm willing to work within the Senate side, and so let's make amendments in Senate side, so when it comes to our House, then we can concur. I think that's the one option.
Well, then, gentlemen, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2763, close the public hearing on House Resolution 3, close the public hearing on House Joint Resolution 29, open a work session on House Joint Resolution 29, and I would entertain a motion from my Vice Chair, if he'd be so kind.
I would make a motion that we move HJR 29 to the floor for adoption.
Representative Dahlem has moved House Joint Resolution 29 to the floor to be adopted. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clint?
In light of the last conversation about amendments, I would just like to say that in general, I would like to see the word fair in front of the word trade in this resolution and any others myself, but I will give deference to the process and not ask for us to have a discussion about that and just vote for the resolution.
Very good. If you can continue that conversation with
us. Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Representative Clint?
Have we announced a work session on this?
Yes, we have. Yes.
That's up at the top, is yes. Where the work session is announced, because down below it just says first public hearing on HJR 29.
We have posted for a public hearing and work session.
On all of those bills.
Yes.
Thank you. I don't have a problem with that.
Thank you, Representative Green. Keep making sure we keep the process clear.
Representative Wilbur.
And with respect to what Representative Cromwell had just said before, you know, having had three children go through public schools here and also colleges in Oregon and California, I think there are a lot of programs. It's just making sure that we get that information out to all the kids that they exist. You know, our school also has a number of exchange programs with Germany, with the Cook Islands, with Japan, and it's a little rural school in Oregon. And we just need to keep get a tally of all the things that we're doing, I think it would be nice as well. Having been on the cultural exchange to Germany, having a son that's studied in Nepal and a daughter that studied in Russia, exactly what Mr. Lim, Representative Lim, has said is true. They all come back different people because they understand a culture differently than the rest of us. And they try to explain it, but the people who are there are the only ones that really understand it. And we have to have many more of our students going all around the world. And I appreciate all of this.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Very good. We have the motion to adopt. Would be Andy, would you please call the roll?
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Dunham?
Aye.
Representative Greenlee?
Aye.
Representative
Trump?
Aye.
Representative
Lynn?
Aye.
Representative
Roblin?
Aye.
Representative
Griffin?
Aye.
Chair Buckley? Aye.
Chair Buckley? Yes, I just want to make one. You want to let him show that
as a prompt is excused. No, it's about to do that. Let's just make a copy. If it is excused, the motion carries. If we have time, gentlemen, if we do this quickly, if you're interested, I'd like to open a work session on House Resolution 3, and I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I make the motion that we move House Resolution 3 to the floor for adoption.
Representative Dahlem has moved House Resolution 3 to the floor for adoption. Any discussion? Seeing none, would you please call the roll?
Representative Klein?
Aye.
Representative
Baum? Aye.
Representative Greenlee?
Aye.
Representative
Crum.
Representative
Crummel.
Aye.
Representative Lim.
Aye.
Representative Roblin.
Aye.
Representative
Wisnett.
Aye.
Chair Buckley.
Aye. The motion carries. I'm going to ask Representative Lim if he would like to carry the previous resolution on the floor. So do we need to reopen the work session to do that?
No, I think.
Okay. For House Resolution 3, I'd like to offer Representative Cannon the chance to carry it, and that motion carries. And for House Resolution 29, Representative Lim, if you would be so kind. Thank you very much for bringing that forward. Gentlemen, we will I need to close the work session on House Resolution 3. Gentlemen, thank you for your time and attention. We will take up the Chinese Language Bill, House Bill 2763, the next opportunity we have. And I hope you all have excellent weekends. Representative Clem?
I just wanted to take note of an opportunity that's in the room, actually. I had the opportunity to go to the Chinese New Year celebration out at Western that we had heard about from the president of Western. I actually went, and I met a lot of the Chinese students. But I also met a new friend who works here in the Capitol that I'd like all of you to know about if you get a chance to see her. That's Chin. She works in the Senate. And when we talk about the resources who have been in China, who know Chinese here in America, she's one of them. And I think if you see her in the Capitol, you might want to take a moment to talk to her and her story. And I thought she'd be on the testimony list, but I think maybe she's too shy to get.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anything else for the good of the order?
My son,
I'm going to adjourn this hearing. Thank you very much.
Shame. That's all.